Hi, I'm Paul Keenan, and you're about to start developing strength from the inside out with this podcast. I'm a personal trainer and mentor for trainers and coaches. With me, you won't get motivational fluff or hype. You will get a combination of brain science, real client case studies, transformational psychology, action steps, and some woo-woo wisdom, all rolled into one superset. If you're wanting more from your life, to feel better, look better, to heal, perhaps to have more and to be more, then this is the podcast for you. Because you're going to learn how to strengthen your mind and develop your awareness physically, mentally, and emotionally. All from the inside out. Welcome to the Mind Your Muscle Podcast. So today's guest is Emma Ross. I've known Emma the last few years. We've done a little bit of personal development work together, a little bit of personal training together, a little bit of Botox, I think, together. Well, Emma done the Botox. I just sat there. So I will let Emma introduce herself. Other than I will just say that Emma is a manager in the Belfast Trust. Welcome, Emma. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me and for that nice introduction.
So you're in the Belfast Trust. What do you do?
So my name's Emma. I work as a nurse and a midwife in the Belfast Trust, and I'm a manager of an incredible team here that is called Family Nurse Partnership. So I manage a group of specialist nurses and midwives who provide a therapeutic intervention to first-time young mums and their babies. So we've got young mums, 19 or under, so ranging from 12 up to 20, really. Yeah.
And how long have you been working for the Trust?
Yeah, well, I've been in the Belfast Trust 9 years to the day, because today is my birthday and I started on my birthday 9 years ago in this job. So I've been in the Belfast Trust 9 years, and before that I worked in the Western Trust, and before that I was in England. So yeah.
Awesome. I didn't realize it was your birthday. Happy birthday. and you also do a little bit of aesthetics.
Yeah. Work. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, so as I say, I lived in England before. So about 11 years ago now, I trained in Botox and filler, done my aesthetic nurse training in Liverpool. And yeah, have sort of dipped in and out of aesthetics since then. So it's been, as I say, 11 years. It's not something that I do full time, but it's something that I enjoy. And it's, yeah, a service that I offer to anybody that wants it. I don't overly advertise or anything because I'm just very busy. I work full time in the Belfast Trust, but I do enjoy aesthetics. I've worked for a couple of bigger clinics, but again, yeah, I've just had to sort of prioritize my time with three young kids and working full time. But yes, it's something I do enjoy.
Where's your passion at the minute?
My passion is in the work that I'm doing in my NHS work. And my biggest focus at the minute is really looking at the emotional well-being of staff that I manage and staff that work within the Belfast Trust, but even just in the wider population. I think it's just the acknowledgement of everything that we've been through over the past year and a half with COVID and the huge emotional impact that it has had on people. I was at a conference yesterday by Action Trauma, was looking at young hearts, young minds. So it was very much focused on young people, but there was a speaker there from America, Steve Porges, and he's done a lot of work around the polyvagal therapy, if you're interested, or the polyvagal theory, if you're interested in reading about it. But anyway, one of the quotes or one of the things that he said was that we are walking with open wounds. And that really hit home to me. And I was like, yes, we are. Everybody's sitting in this conference, you know, everybody that has been through, which we all have been through this COVID situation, we are all walking with open wounds, and it's going to take us a while to process through what has happened and what continues to happen, and for us to just readjust and to sort of retune to the new situation that we find ourselves in. Yeah.
So that. Trauma is then kind of central, I suppose, to where your studies at the minute, where your support's at. But it's not just related to COVID, obviously. I mean,
no.
So many more aspects of what you do. You're studying at the minute as well?
Yeah. So I recently started at Queen's to do a master's in systemic psychotherapy. So systemic psychotherapy is quite a mouthful. but basically it's looking at psychotherapy, not just on a one-to-one level, but looking at where people sit within groups, be that families, teams, in couples. So on completion of this course, I will hopefully, if I finish and pass everything, be a qualified psychotherapist, able to offer that sort of family therapy and couples therapy and group therapy to those that need it. And just to go back to your point about trauma not being just related to COVID, of course it's not just related to COVID. I've been really passionate about trauma-informed care and trauma-informed practice and that way of thinking and promoting emotional well-being and resilience for years and years. You know, I've probably the last 12 years have been focused on that type of work. And so COVID has just really brought it to the fore, which is brilliant. So there's everybody sort of focused on it now, which has given me more of a platform to talk about it. But it's always been my passion and my belief that we need to really be looking at our emotional well-being and, you know, doing what we can to sustain ourselves in our roles within healthcare, but also in our own lives.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on the podcast, was because I see the link, I see the correlation, I see the connection between why people maybe will come to me, or why they've come to me in the past, why they'll come to me in the future for support and coaching and personal training, that it is not just simply to lose weight, because that is, weight gain is an effect of something. And I'm not going to go into talking about excess calorie consumption because of emotional eating, but it's part and parcel of a process that somebody is trying to deal with something in some way. And whenever I, you know, if I do sit down with somebody or I chat to somebody, whenever I'm trying to go and look for the underlying causes of why we're here in the first place, why they've come to me, a lot of it does stem back to trauma that it, of some description. You know, I've had clients who had talked about fibromyalgia and talked about pains and when I go and I look at, well, when did that start and how did it start and what are you getting now and what are the symptoms, and it comes back so many times to some form of traumatic event. But what is trauma? I'll allow you to give me the textbook definition. You can also give me an abbreviation of your own if you want.
Well, trauma is, it's experienced different by everybody. It's very individual, but it refers to experiences in the individual that cause intense physical and psychological stress reactions. So trauma, some people might conjure up an image of trauma, like nurses that I work with in the trust, for example. You know, we've got like a trauma coordinator, but that person works with, traumatic injuries in the emergency department. So trauma means different things to different people. But what we're talking about is that psychological stress reaction. And so that can come down to one single event, a multiple set of events, or a set of circumstances that is experienced by a person as being physically or emotionally harmful. And then it causes sort of lasting adverse effects on that person's emotional well-being. So that is the sort of a mix between my explanation and the textbook explanation.
Yeah. And whenever, you know, again, and I literally was listening to something half an hour before it came on, and it actually just reinforced everything that I was thinking about and knew already. But it was, you know, yes, we have this. There's sometimes a belief that trauma has to be something massive and big. It's this big event, or it's a car crash, or you know, it's a serious assault, or it's life changing, could be life ending of something. But there's also, and this was just a simple example, and I can relate to this too, from school. From maybe you're in school and they're picking, I don't know, the football team or the netball team. They're picking sides. They go out and play in the playground, and it's like, right, well, let's pick them. And it comes to you, it comes to Paul. It's like, oh, Paul's not good enough. Paul gets left to the end. And then Paul develops this belief that he is not good enough. And then that belief develops. We suppress it. So then it's a case of, right, well, I'm not going to do sports now. I'm not going to do this because I can't do this. And that small thing at that time, that one thing, can grow and grow and be nurtured. And then so many more life experiences after that.
Yeah, I know.
How do we deal with that?
I think what you've sort of highlighted there or explained there is, in an ideal world, people would be able to reflect back and see where those things stem from or where those beliefs about yourself originate from. But quite often it's difficult for people to pinpoint it to one thing or a group of things. Sorry, that's a wee phone ringing there on my computer.
Do you want to answer that? It could be somebody going through an experience that they need support with.
Yeah, so in an ideal world, what you've just described there is someone who can pinpoint back to a set of circumstances or a situation in a primary school setting or school setting, which has led them to the beliefs that they have with themselves. Quite often, though, people will not have that clarity around why they feel the way they feel. And so I think through access and support with someone that you feel safe with, be that on in a professional context or with a particular friend or a particular coach like yourself or whatever, it's just someone that you can feel safe with and that will allow you to show a certain level of vulnerability to actually bring forward difficult emotions and difficult beliefs and discuss where they might originate from. And I think sort of as practitioners and coaches and everything as well, it's important for us to sort of know where our remit is. And if things become too much for me, for example, I know that I have other people to signpost on to. So I've had some people sitting in front of me with extremely difficult emotions, overwhelming emotions, where I'm not the person to take all of this on. So it's sort of thinking about the support structure, not just as one person, but as a set of people or a set of services that can wrap around someone and offer them the support that they need. Yeah.
Going to the root cause of something, like you said, I mean, it's very few people will be able to get there themselves. It's generally through asking questions or going to somebody who is where they can ask questions, where they feel safe that they can get to those answers. But I think it's massively important, especially for my role and what I do, that I get to grips with a little bit of that. And it's not about dealing with that issue, because I don't deal with that issue and I never will. And, you know, you're right. And we have to refer out and we have to get the outsourced support that people need from qualified professionals. And I will do that. And I will refer people to different resources for whatever reason and provide support. In terms of your interest and connection with trauma specifically, how did that come about? Do you know?
Yeah. Literally just as you were talking there, I was like, oh, will I share this or will I not? So I'm going to share it. I'm going to be vulnerable with you and your listeners. So I think some of the things we've said there about pinpointing difficult emotions or difficult behaviours back to a certain incident or event might be a bit restricting for some people, because for me, for example, okay, now here's the vulnerability. For years, I suffered with an eating disorder and bulimia for years, but it was never just one day that triggered that. It was a series of things. And I've been in a very privileged position where I have access to therapy in the work that I do, and I work with incredible people who are like, we do joke about having sort of free psychotherapy whenever we're in work, because we have those therapeutic conversations. But whenever I think of how those behaviors and the beliefs that I had around myself manifested themselves, that didn't come back to one single event that happened in the school playground, for example. That was just a trickling in of things that were said to me over the years or different situations. And so it was a culmination of things. It wasn't just one thing. So I think, you know, sometimes whenever we think of trauma, you can think to yourself, well, I've never really had any big trauma, so therefore I'm fine and I should be able to just get on with this. But I think we have to stop and acknowledge that very, very few of us, if any, come through this life unscathed. And we will suffer emotional difficulties and we will hurt at the hands of others. And, you know, we'll struggle with things. And it's part of growing up and it's part of maturing and working our way through life. But it's just so important to have the people around you, the person, the therapist, the group of friends, whoever that might be, to be vulnerable, appropriately vulnerable, and to feel safe to sort of have those conversations rather than putting on the brave face, which is also very much the Northern Irish way. You know, it's, well, just get on with it, you'll be grand, and someone else has had it more difficult, and, you know, just look on the bright side or whatever. I think we're not probably the most effective group of people at talking about our emotions and acknowledging them and working through them. So yeah, I mean, my mum and dad think I'm on another planet. So generation wise, even, you know, just moving up one generation from me to my parents, they're like, where did you get all this stuff from? Whereas now I'm trying to parent my children with a lot of emotional awareness and talking about feelings and all of that kind of thing. So it's obviously me just trying to share with them what I know to help them. But yeah.
So we don't just think a positive thought.
No, gosh. Positive vibes only. That cracks me up so much.
Yeah, I've talked about that before. About and it was actually with Seamus Fox. He was in the podcast a couple of months ago, and I'm actually working with Seamus now in his Mindset Junkie Academy, and we're talking about, you know, that the toxic positivity, which is nearly the opposite of what you're trying to do, because you're trying to help to create a space for people to open up. Whereas what that's doing is that's like putting a lid on it and saying, nope, we're not dealing with that. We're just going to lift this balloon here and just go off the happy land.
Yeah. So there's an author called Susan David. She is a psychologist who works in Harvard Medical School, and she's got various different accolades around her name, but she's written a book called Emotional Agility. And she talks a bit about toxic positivity within her book. So, I mean, toxic positivity is basically, it's like gaslighting people, including yourself. So if you, I talk a lot about toxic positivity whenever I'm doing talks and work and things. And so if we think about even yourself and your self-compassion, practicing toxic positivity towards yourself. So those things of, oh, just get on with it. Everyone else can do it. So why can't you? Is actually like gaslighting yourself. So it's questioning your own reality. So if you're finding something difficult, you're finding it difficult. No matter how many times people say to you, positive vibes only, and here's a lovely inspirational quote for the day. Yes, that can be uplifting for a moment. And some people may live off that, and it's enough to get them through whatever it is they're going through, but not everybody. And so I get so frustrated by the positive vibes, high vibes. You're not allowed to be negative. You're not allowed to have difficult emotions. You must kick them to the back and just pretend to be happy all the time. It's just absolutely ridiculous and not beneficial to any of us. And who doesn't have difficult emotions? That's the ridiculousness of that whole idea and the social media message of vibing high and just be happy and I'm so happy and why aren't you? So it's so frustrating.
Well, frustrating is probably a nice word to use for it. And again, it is what I have talked around this in the past before, is that we are using that and just saying, well, you know, you don't need to do that. You don't need to be or feel the negativity. You don't mm-hmm. need that. Just go, just flip that thought. And I get that, but that doesn't help. It doesn't deal with it. And we also have to realize that it's real and that there is a balance there, that, you know, we have to experience those things in order to understand what the opposite is too. And experiencing it and going through it is part of the process, and not just ignoring it, not just suppressing it, not pushing it away. Yeah, we don't want to be living in that the negative frame, you know, the negative box, and to be down, but we have to, I think, to recognize that we're there and sit there for a little minute and tolerate it.
Before
we can move through, because ultimately it is connected to the other end. It is connected to the positivity. There is that opportunity to move on to it, but we can't just flip, because it's, for me, it's like a ladder. It's like a line. You know, you move along the line. It's like the queue in Subway sandwich. You're going in, you're picking your bread first, and you're not skipping over everything else and just paying for the bread at the end. It is all connected. So you don't just go from one side of it to the other without going through lots of different things in between. And I think a lot of people, maybe even ourselves, have been caught in that trap before, where, you know, we have dabbled in that aspect of positive thinking and through personal development, but hopefully we've learned a lot from it too. Yeah.
And I think just on that note of the personal development thing, the other thing that provokes a really strong reaction to me whenever I see it on social media and various other areas is the law of attraction and the manifestation, which is great. But what the law of attraction and the whole manifesting agenda does is it nearly makes people feel guilty for having negative thoughts. And our brains are not made to just think positively. So it's almost like, you know, and I was heavily immersed in that law of attraction thing at one stage. And yeah, I got a lot from it. But then it started becoming a bit insidious in that it was, I'm not allowed to think negatively. Get that out of your head quick or you'll attract that to yourself. Yet, having done a lot of work around, for example, perinatal mental health. So I really struggled with negative thinking after I had my kids. So I would run through scenarios in my head where my kids would get hurt. So if I'm standing at the side of a road, I'm imagining them running out on the road. And then I'm like, oh my goodness, why am I thinking this? And why am I having all these horrible images of my kids getting hurt? But having done some perinatal mental health training, actually, negative thoughts to some degree are normal, because if we didn't have them, we wouldn't have the safety. We wouldn't have the instinct to act and protect our children. So if we thought nothing bad was ever going to happen, then why would we ever need to protect them? So those thoughts, although whenever they become too much and they become intrusive, we need to be dealing with them. A certain level of negative thinking is actually a self-protection. Yeah, so you know, someone who knows all the risks about smoking, but chooses to just blank that out and never think about it, will just smoke, and not think about the health implications. Whereas someone who's thinking, well, smoking can give me cancer, smoking can cause me to have lung disease, yada, 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 is going to stop them maybe, or give them food for thought about how much they're smoking or whatever. So does that make sense, where we have to think negatively in order to protect ourselves, and where the law of attraction nearly tries to suppress that in us? And I just don't think it's as clear cut as that, and it's unfair to put that on people. So hopefully that makes sense.
And what you talked about yourself was, you know, in your own experience, was that there was no like one situation. It was it was like brick upon brick. It was built up like a house. And effectively that's what happened, was that there is then this belief that is created with every single brick that is added, and with the bricks, they're strong. It's difficult to get through, to break through. Everybody's you're keeping people out, but you're also keeping yourself trapped and locked in there, and being able to deal with that. So I know that there will be people listening who, and I don't want people to go and try and find the trigger. I don't want people to go and try and look for that and do that. All I want to do is just bring awareness to the point that, you know, you could be experiencing, you know, if it's alcohol, if it's drugs, it's sex, if it's something there, if there is, you're going through something in your life where you're not happy, you are struggling, for whatever reason. And you talked about the dark cloud, I think, before we come on, coming over you and things like that. I don't want people to go and try and find an answer. That's not what this is about, and that's not what I want anyone to do from this podcast. It's just about bringing awareness to what you could be thinking, so that then you can go and look for the support and get that support. And know that people are going through this.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, they are. Sometimes as well, though, I think, as you say, it's not about finding the reason. I need to find out the reason why I'm like this. It's not always as easy as that. And as I say, I've just been very lucky to work in this way and to be having these types of conversations daily with clients, with service users, with staff. And so over a period of 10 years, I've had a lot of access to therapy or whatever, and a lot of reflexivity. So thinking about why I act the way I act, why I feel the way I feel. And I've been afforded that opportunity to do that. And I'm very privileged and feel like I've come on a real journey. So, and you know, that was through my work. So I'm very, very lucky to work in a place where it allows me to do that. But yeah, I think, and it's not about everybody running out and having to get access to a therapist. That's not it either. But maybe someday we'll get to where America is, where therapy is seen as the norm. And why would you not want therapy? And that is my opinion. Why would you not want it if you could get it? But yeah, it's often just a set of circumstances, or a collection of as you call them, bricks, a collection of ideas, a collection of experiences that have led you to a place. And it's not going to change overnight. If you've got inherent intrinsic beliefs and behaviours, then obviously it's a process, and everybody's way of working through that and timeline is very different. So it's not about comparing yourself to anybody else either. It's just allowing yourself to process this at a pace that is right for you. So yeah,
you mentioned stress reactions in terms of people. So can you give any examples of what types of reactions or maybe behaviors or maybe thought patterns or feelings that somebody could be experiencing that would identify that perhaps they are dealing with some form of underlying trauma?
I think I've done a lot of work recently on burnout, because burnout is something that's talked about a lot now. You know, given the pandemic and everything, it's been talked about an awful lot more than it was previously. So burnout is sort of defined by three different things: emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, which is where you sort of lack empathy, you lack the compassion because you can't be bothered anymore, and a decreased sense of accomplishment, so a feeling that nothing you're doing is making a difference. Now, things that lead to burnout, as we say, the emotional exhaustion, it's where stress reactions are activated, so your stress cycle is activated. And when people don't do anything to process through the stress reaction, that's when it's leading to emotional overspill. So the outburst of anger. So you haven't got that space between the trigger and the response, for want of a better word. So where you're lashing out, like you just flip your lid. So yeah, there's work. If you Google flip your lid on YouTube, there's a very good video of how the brain works and how your stress reaction is more triggered whenever you're in a place of emotional overwhelm. So yeah, I mean, if someone is experiencing irritability, lashing out in anger, flipping their lid, then yeah, there's usually something under there that's causing that to boil over. I'm not saying that that's a traumatic event when you were a child or whatever, but there's something there that's not allowing you to keep your cool and to keep a lid on it. So that would be a pointer. And when you're thinking about burnout, then if you're not processing through emotions effectively and keeping a lid on all of those difficult, not keeping a lid, rather talking through all those difficult emotions and processing through them rather than getting stuck in difficult emotions, then you're gonna flip your lid because you need to process through them in order to continue.
Flip your lid, lose your mind. For me, that's how I see it, and how I would kind of describe it and relate it at times. But obviously there's so many different reactions that somebody can have to stressful events, traumatic events, incidents, and build-ups and so on. So with the aspect of nursing and trauma and people maybe not being happy or not feeling happy of where they're at, then you stick on the other hat and you inject them with something.
Oh, nicely. Okay.
Talk to me about is there a push and a pull there with the aesthetics and in the nursing and the trauma and, you know, helping people through maybe beliefs that they have around themselves with you?
Yeah, there's a bit of a moral pull there, which anybody that knows me will know that I sort of battle with this internally. But so aesthetics, I'm an aesthetic nurse practitioner, which I've explained. And what that means is I inject Botox and filler. Now, I think that, you know, the aesthetic industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. It's very well documented, the rate at which it's accelerating and the financial side of it. I mean, it's just off the scale with regards to the growth. But there's very different services within that umbrella term of aesthetics. And there's, you know, it's very unregulated as well. So I'm sure people know, because I've heard this on the news and things, that, you know, there are people with no medical qualifications that can go out and do this. You know, I am a registered nurse. I'm an independent nurse prescriber. I'm a midwife. I've worked my entire career for the health service, and I'm very proud to be a nurse. And also, to be honest with you, nurses don't really get the opportunity to delve outside of their practice very often. So the dipping my toe into private practice and doing a bit of aesthetics was, at one stage, my main focus was to just leave the health service because I had felt so burnt out, leave the health service and start my own business and just completely work in private practice. But having dipped my toe in that, there's someone at my door leaving me chocolate. Can you believe that? Sorry.
They are not.
They are.
Yeah. I'll allow you to eat one now while you're talking. Oh, no. For your birthday.
Like waving frantically, stop. But anyway, yes, the aesthetics thing. So I think for me, okay, so for me as an aesthetic practitioner, it definitely does wrangle because I want, so my main focus and the main part of my job is helping people through trauma, looking at where behaviours and beliefs stem from. The aesthetic world, I don't pitch my market audience is not young girls. I don't feel like really young girls need Botox and filler. I think they're beautiful already. The aging process hasn't even started, so why are they looking for anti-aging treatments? And you can see I'm struggling with this because I'm even struggling to talk about it, can't you? I suppose when people come to me, I want that also to be a therapeutic interaction. So it's not therapy, obviously. It's Botox or filler. But it's not about upselling to people and making people feel like you need X, Y, and Z, and then you need to come back for more. You know, I generally will be very respectful of people that come into my aesthetic practice, and I will advise them on my professional opinion because, yes, as we age, fat pads start to move down our face and the aging process takes hold, and some people want to, you know, mitigate against that with a bit of Botox and filler, and that's fine. The main age group for my clients would be sort of 50s, really, 40 plus anyway. The very odd person a little bit younger than that. But I think it has its place, and it has its place for safe and effective practitioners, which is, you know, what I am. I don't think it'll ever be my full-time job. I think I really love my NHS work and the studying that I'm doing and everything that really, really gets me going. But I really do enjoy the aesthetic practice, and I enjoy making people feel good about themselves and knowing that I provide a really high quality service. So yeah, there's definitely two hats that don't always sit that well together, I don't think. But yeah, I do it.
So I mean that's real and it's honest, and you know,
yeah.
what you're saying is that you have a process really that you're dealing with, and you're going through that because it was something that you were thinking about, you know, doing full time. And let's be real, you could go and probably earn 3, 4, 5 times the amount of money and income maybe that you're earning with the NHS if that was your goal. If you were money oriented and you were only looking at that opportunity there, yes.
Yeah. And I think actually you just hit the nail on the head there, because in looking at doing aesthetics full time, I thought, and I really did believe, that I was money orientated. But going through that process, actually, I'm not trying to shame anybody that is money orientated, but that's fine. But for me, I felt like an epiphany that actually I'm actually not money orientated. And I nearly felt proud of that then, because, you know, people close to me at that time, when I was really pushing for the aesthetics and pushing for what I wanted to earn in a year and yada yada, my close friends and family were actually starting to worry about me, about the big ideas that I had and how hard I was working and pushing myself. And now I feel like I've got a nice balance. So I have much more time for my family. I love my NHS work. It's Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. It suits me perfectly with my home life. And I get an awful lot of fulfillment out of the work that I do. I love the people I work with. I really have a heart for the patients, for the young mums. And what I love most about what I am qualified to do is helping people. And when someone is able to process through something in an effective and positive way, that's my driver, not money. Because yeah, I could earn a hell of a lot more working in aesthetics, but
yeah, no. You could. And just obviously with the aesthetics work, that's something that you do. So that's private. You do it obviously in your own time, etc. For anybody who's wanting to connect with you in relation to anything, we'll put up a link in the show notes for the aesthetics. You don't do private work in relation to trauma support or anything at the minute. It's only within the NHS. Is that right?
Yeah, it's just within the NHS. I mean, I'm more than happy to speak to anybody and help them with anything they need. But yeah, it's just NHS really is my focus at the minute. Yeah. I mean, who knows? I could get an influx of inquiries after this podcast.
Well, yeah, you could. And I, again, it's something that is obviously, yes, you're dealing with that and supporting people in the NHS, but it's something that everybody is experiencing on some level at some point. And like you talked about there, you know, there will be people who will eventually, we will get there to where therapy is the norm. And that we go, I mean, ultimately, I am a therapist, not a physical therapist. And even just that, those letters, PT, I do think about it as physical therapy rather than physical training. Because it's not just about training. It's not just about exercise. There's mobility, there's movement, there's mental well-being, there's spiritual well-being, there's emotional well-being. So for me, there is an aspect of therapy in what I do. I'm not going to call myself a therapist. Don't worry. But yeah, I mean, there is definitely scope for that in terms of that provision of support. And I'm actually speaking, I'm doing a Zoom event. Well, it's not Zoom because they're not allowed to use Zoom, but I'm doing an event for International Men's Day in November. I didn't even know there was an International Men's Day until I was invited for this one. But yeah, and it's around home working, which is obviously come a lot more again for most people because of COVID pandemic. And it's for a company, obviously, who it's mostly in IT support, but I think they're all working from home and have been since the pandemic. And then some of their issues are at the minute is around maybe going back to work and what impact that is going to have on them. So just give me a wee second. There's actually somebody at my door, would you believe, wanting to deliver a parcel? So I'm just going to pause it here a wee second and then I will resume.
Yes.
Okay, so there's another parcel delivery for me from Amazon. But this is how real the podcast gets, interruptions. No. So yeah, International Men's Day, and speaking with a lot of people, male and female, who are working from home. And some of the concerns that they have at the minute as a company that have been expressed is about going back into the office and being with people and interacting. So, mm-hmm. You know, and they will have stress around that. There will be, you could say trauma around it as well. Mm-hmm. There will be dealing with something. They will all have dealt something through the pandemic. So this is what people are dealing with. And not just now. I mean, we've always been dealing with something. And, mm-hmm. You know, I said this in the police was, whenever people were talking about, you know, they were getting hammered with overtime and then they were complaining about it at the time they were getting the overtime. And then what would happen was that the overtime would start to dry up a little bit. But I always said, don't worry, because there will be something else happens in the next month or so and you will get that back again, because there's always something happening. And it's what we do is we have to deal with it and we have to process it. And mm-hmm. We have to, you know, understand that there is support out there, especially for people who are going through stressful situations. So what I will do with the we'll try and maybe hook up some pages into the show notes for support for anybody. Mm-hmm. And obviously you can reach out to me, and if needs be we can reach out to Emma, who will refer on somewhere else. So if you're listening, feel free to knock on my virtual door. We can get a chat about anything. You know, with the podcast, obviously it is in relation to mindset, it is in relation to physical, emotional, spiritual and intellectual well-being and support. And then obviously I'm working as well at the minute with Seamus in the Mindset Junkie Academy, where we are working, I guess, more so just on mindset and helping people progress through where they're at. And it is not in relation to earning 10k, 20k, 30k a month. It is not about that. It is very much about the self, which is why, like I said at the start, is why I brought you on, is why I wanted to have this conversation around trauma and around jabbing people with needles. So thank you very much for coming on. Thanks for the insights. It was good to see you. It was good to chat to you. And I hope you have a fantastic birthday and that you go and eat some of them chocolates that people are leaving at your door. And then if you need any support in relation to weight loss, then you come to me after that, because this is what happens. It's a cycle that people go through, that people leave chocolates at their door and then they eat them and then they think, oh, I put on weight. Now I need some support. So I am here for anybody who goes through that, especially at Christmas, whenever the tubs of Quality Street and the Heroes and whatever else is out there. So come to me once you've eaten all your chocolates and I will help you.
I'll bear that in mind. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for coming on. It was great to catch up. Chat soon.
Bye.
You're catching this episode before February 2022. I will be getting back to in-person coaching as well as doing online, but I will only be working with 4 one-to-one in-person clients and only 12 people online in the new year, so that's in 2022. So if you're interested in making an application, getting a chat to see what it's like to come and work with me in personal development or personal training, then there is a little quiz attached to the show notes for this episode. Go and fill that in. It should take you about 30, 45 seconds and see if you're ready to flex your muscles a little more and whether 2022 is an option for coming on board with VF. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the whole podcast. If you're someone who enjoys seeing other people grow, then please share this podcast with your friends and family. If you found help through my voice and message, then I'm sure that they will too. So please share it on social media, share it via text, WhatsApp, and your DMs. Be present, challenge your own beliefs, trust the process, take action, be the community. So please, for every episode I share with you, I'd love you to share that podcast directly with someone else. And if you have questions, I'm there to help too. You can email me questions to paul@volumefitness.co.uk. I might even use your question for a future episode. And lastly, I do have one more request. And you only have to do this once, by the way. I want to reach and help more people, and you can help me with that. So if you can, please leave my podcast a fantastic review on iTunes. That way we can both help others gain strength and belief, all from the inside out. Thanks for listening.